Welcome to our first podcast. This is Movement Basics with Vaughn and Matt. And today we wanted to just introduce our audience to the idea of what is movement. And to start out with, it might be a little bit easier for people to listen if they understood who we were. So let's just kind of get to that. Vaughn, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself and how you got to this point?
Well, Matt, I graduated from the University of Minnesota in math, actually, and worked in the tech and education field for a little bit before I moved to training and doing nutrition. I found it was my passion. I really enjoyed working with others and helping people to lose weight at first. And then now I'm definitely into working with people in pain. I study a lot of different physical therapy systems and movement-based systems to help people feel better and perform better in their athletics or just basic daily functional living tasks.
All right. Well, so I started out, I've come full circle. I thought that when I was coming out of high school, I should be a teacher because everybody told me so, and that avenue didn't work out. I tried to go to computer animation school. That didn't work out. And I eventually, for some mysterious reason, I went through culinary school. I graduated. I can make really fancy French food, but all that really helps me do is just make food. I can go into the refrigerator and make something out of whatever's there. So it's a good skill to have, but doesn't really help you in all the fun ways like moving. So I went to massage school, and in the last couple years, I have gone into learning these different movement systems. And so that's kind of where I started. That's where my journey, I kind of feel like, really started. So I utilize the functional movement systems in the functional movement screen, the selective functional movement assessment, the Y balance test, and I do active release techniques, massage therapy, and other soft tissue modalities. Vaughn, what do you do?
I also do the FMS, functional movement screen, SFMA, selective functional movement assessment. I'm certified in some various PRI, Posture Restoration Institute courses. And although I have not been certified in movement system impairment syndromes, systems, I utilize those principles maybe the most out of all of what I do and help people with. I'm also certified in the Y Balance course, and I'm also certified in precision nutrition, level one nutrition coach. Probably certified in other stuff that I just can't think of right now, but those are the big basics that I'm certified in.
So where did we meet?
We met at the Bloomington, Minnesota SFMA course in March 2017, and it was a match made in heaven.
Yeah, I have to kind of back up there. So at first, I kind of thought that Vaughn was going to be the annoying guy at the seminar who was asking way too many questions, because I had actually gone through the SFMA the week before in Colorado Springs, and there was unfortunately a guy who was that guy, and everybody knew it, and we kind of all didn't want to say anything. But the more that I got to know Vaughn, the more I understood he's not that annoying guy. He's actually asking really good questions, and it was really nice to hear him say the questions he was, but it was really funny because at first I was a little apprehensive, but we got paired together. We just said, we made eye contact and said, you know, let's work together. So we
did. Exactly. And I remember first checking Matt's shoulder flexion, and I thought, this guy needs me. I'm gonna help him.
Yeah, I was a big mess
for it. And we did. We were a match made in heaven, as I like to say, right?
Right. So, who would you say the audience of this podcast? Who are we trying to reach out to?
Well, let's face it, Matt. Anybody who's probably already still listening is the educated exerciser or someone who's involved in the strength and conditioning, physical therapy world who thinks about these kinds of topics like movement and alignment and soft tissue. So anybody who's interested in those things and is looking to optimize their movement with different ideas, different systems, different, real life, practical world life experience that we've had with our own clients and with our own bodies, this would be the right place for you.
I think the other population that we could kind of say, when you think of someone who's a weekend warrior, someone who just wants to get after it in the gym, maybe even Grandma Betty, but really anybody, and people who just sometimes just need a little extra push. Some people need a little extra motivation. Some people need some information on where to look. We're going to get kind of technical with some of the information we give you, but we just want to help everybody move. But we know that the people who are probably listening to this right now are people who probably are in the industry that we're in already, or people who are just starting in that adventure. So what would you say our message is to people?
I think our message is, let's get back to the basics and let's master those basics for ourselves. So I've seen a lot of practitioners, whether it's physical therapists, be it strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, that are missing the really big stuff. And what I'm talking about is breathing, alignment, basic mobility, basic stability, that we really need to make sure we prioritize in our own exercise programs so that it is meaningful for us to give to our clients then. And that importance, I think, we can relay to them because we can say that we've been there. And me and Matt can say that we certainly have. What would you say our message is?
Well, something I heard before that I kind of like. So, Vaughn, does CrossFit suck? Just a yes or no.
No.
Okay. What makes CrossFit suck?
CrossFit sucks because when people are thrown into crazy movements like kipping pull-ups, which I think is a great movement, but I'm certainly not going to ask my grandma to go out and run a 100-meter sprint, even though it's an unloaded movement. But what I can ask my grandma to do is to just get up, because right now she's using a walker, so it would be still great for her to progress beyond a walker, which I think she's capable of doing.
I like that. I mean, I just tell people, you know what? CrossFit doesn't necessarily suck. You might suck at doing the things that are required to make a good CrossFit workout. So if you can't do those things, can you really blame something like Taibo, CrossFit? Name your poison, name your event, name whatever it is. And maybe you just don't have the ability to move to the specified requirements of those events. But you know, that actual event may not be unhealthy itself. The unhealthiness, I think, and I think Vaughn would agree, is that when people excessively compete in these arenas, like they just don't ever take a break. They just say, oh, you know what? I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. even though I only had 1 hour of sleep, and I just will never get injured because I'm invincible. And just kind of ask your neighbor, John, or whoever, who's 45 years old, hey, do you have any injuries? No, I'm fine. And they come back to you later and go, oh, my back hurts. But of course, they're not injured. They're just a weekend warrior or whoever. So that's kind of where I think we're at in this day and age. So what kind of keeps you motivated, Vaughn, to keep helping people? Like, what is it that really, I don't know, what was your kind of genie moment where you said, hey, this is for me?
I think when I figured out that when I went to really basic movements and found that people really needed fundamental, I mean, I'm talking about just the ability to itch in the middle of your back without pain. I found that these small changes in correcting people's mobility and their stability would give pretty life-changing results to just that nagging shoulder injury that just comes up when I get past, you know, bench pressing my heaviest set, and it's just always kind of there, right? And I think as I begin to include more of the small, just very subtle corrections to either the way that they moved, correcting their mobility and increasing their mobility, it was easy for me to see that these people they could start progressing again in that squat, in that bench press, in their baseball performance, and whatever athletic performance that they were doing. It's just so much easier to move without pain. And a lot of things I think people, they take for granted, and they assume pain's gonna be there. It doesn't have to be, and we are here to help.
Okay, so I think we meet in the middle, kind of in the rehab setting, where I'm on the medical side more than I am in the rehab side. I kind of cross over. Von Kinnegensen kind of gets into that area. And then he goes into performance side, where when you think about going to the gym and lifting weights, that's a performance exercise to some extent. But he's helping people as a personal trainer. I'm helping people as a massage therapist and a movement therapist. But I think we do well to we speak the same language for the functional movement systems and movement impairment, and we bounce all these ideas off of each other. And I think it's great because he can say, hey, what do you think about a person who doesn't move their shoulder well, who can't squat, who can't do these things? And I'll say, well, when I look at it from a tissue standpoint, these are the things I think about, what I look at. And he'll say, okay, so from a global movement standpoint, these are the things that I look at. And so he's definitely opened my eyes to how to look at the body from a more global standpoint and take me out of the idea of just looking at individual body parts. So where would you say that who have you helped recently that has really just, it was someone that probably 5 or 6 years ago you might not have been able to help?
I would say for most all of my clients now that have gotten out of pain, I probably wouldn't have been able to really help most of them. Because when I saw what they needed, it was a little bit different than every other client. So you might have somebody, it could be a physical therapist, it could be a trainer, it could be anybody in the health field. And oftentimes they'll use the same approach to, for instance, rehabbing a shoulder injury, where they have people do rotator cuff work, but it's kind of the same protocol. And unfortunately, some people are not going to fall into, they will not qualify for that particular protocol. And so sometimes for some people, it might be a mobility restriction, and it might be a very basic mobility restriction that's going on. I have a woman right now. She has a little bit of shoulder pain. But just when she does shoulder extension, we've been improving that gradually. The pain is decreasing accordingly with her range of motion in shoulder extension. So she is able to progress in getting out of pain. It takes work. It takes some level of consistency. But it is very possible to get out of pain once you understand and once you go through a full screen, I think, of what is your mobility like, your stability like, and what is your, like Matt was saying, what's your global alignment like, and what is that, how is that affecting, you know, for instance, your shoulder?
So a long time ago, I've been doing massage for more than 15 years at this point. The idea was that in order to really help someone, you made things looser. You made things not tight anymore. And it was just a muscle-based thing. We didn't even really talk about nerves. We didn't talk about motor control. We didn't talk about terms that they used more in personal training or rehab setting. It was just, as a massage therapist, you're either digging your thumb in, you're digging your elbow in, or maybe you're doing fascial release. But even today, the biggest deals that you're going to see with people are they're still coming at you from the perspective of loosening things up. And what we'll get into in later podcasts is the idea that looser isn't necessarily better. And the idea of being able to control your body, whatever you're doing, sitting, standing, running, jumping, it doesn't really matter. You have to be able to actually control your body. And for someone who For instance, they can't touch their toes with their feet together and they're standing, but they can do it during something called a long sit where you're sitting and you have your feet together and your feet pointed towards the ceiling. If you can actually touch your toes in that position, it means that you don't actually have hamstring problems. It means that your hamstrings, which are your secondary hip extenders, are actually doing the job of your glutes. So if your butt doesn't seem to want to work, then something else makes the motion happen. And that is something as a clinician early on that I didn't understand. I didn't understand, well, isn't stretching going to take care of it? Isn't this or that going to help? And I would get people better. And when I say better, I mean they just were out of pain temporarily, sometimes hours, sometimes only for minutes, sometimes even for up to a couple weeks. But I had it down where you were going to see me for 6 consecutive visits. And in every visit, I knew exactly how much better you were going to get. And then all bets were off after that. I was hopeful, and if you met up with my timetable, then I thought we were both successful, and that just isn't the case. I treat people now, sometimes it only takes me 4 or 5 minutes, something that would have taken me 3 or 4 months of continuous once a week or multiple times a week work to do, and it's because I help people breathe and kind of see how they move, how do they feel when they move. So sometimes it seems a little hippy-dippy, but it's okay. I just want people to understand where they are and be okay with that. So kind of switching gears here, who would you say in the industry that you look up to, Vaughn?
By far, probably the most influential on me has been Shirley Sarman with the movement system impairment syndromes. And she, I would say, has given a really great roadmap in terms of movement and how we move and pain. So basically, if you have a standard for how someone moves or how their alignment is, you can identify the change that they need to make or that you can try to initiate so that they can perhaps perform that corrected movement and then get out of pain. And for a lot of people, it's almost so simple and too obvious that when they do this, it's like if they move, for instance, and they are lifting their arm, for example, if they have their palm facing ahead, that might decrease the pain versus having their palm facing towards them when they lift the arm. And that can be an indication that the way they need to hold their arm in their posture, for example, may need to be a little bit, we can say internally rotated, or having that palm more facing us. But I would also say that there are times where you can see the opposite of that too. So you need to know that there is a standard, and we need to find out if we are doing something different than that, and then basically see if we can correct that and help people correct that. And a lot of it will relate to their posture as well. So I mean, without going too far into that, because I know questions about, you know, who we looked up to, I would say Mike Reinhold's been really big. And then Bridging the Gap from Rehab to Fitness, Eric Cressy, Mike Robertson, Dean Somerset have been some really positive, good influences on me.
I would definitely agree with everything you said. I think adding names like Brett Jones, Greg Cook, and a few others, there's even a fun one out there. If you look up Missy Bunch, she does Death at a Desk or Death at the Desk. I can't remember the name of her company, but she and her husband are doing that work, and she kind of puts out fun videos where it's like, hey, here's your 5-minute warm-up, here's your 2-minute thing to do for the day, and you can find her on Facebook. But she's really easy to connect with, and she's really easy to talk to and communicate with, and because she smiles, and it's a genuine smile, it makes me think that it's going to be easier for me to do. So it gets me motivated sometimes just to move around, because hey, we're at a desk too sometimes, and we're not always, you know, moving around. So for anybody who thinks that we are in the best shape of our lives or anything, I don't know if that's necessarily true. Certainly not true for me.
Yeah, but I think the difference between us and other people who are actually really good too, who've created awesome systems, is that we practice self-care. And I got to say, it's one thing to practice your passion outside of yourself, but if you can practice your passion inside of yourself and are willing to take a look at yourself and to go after things that you really need, I think that says a lot about you. And it's one of the reasons I'm working with Matt, because Matt's open to that feedback. He needs that feedback, as well as I need that feedback too. So we're both improving, and we're probably going to be making some big changes within the next, I would say within 2 years. It's going to be pretty massive, though, right?
Yeah, I think if you had started recording my movement, and I think you did do some recordings during your assessment of me, there were some severe limitations, and that was 6 weeks ago, probably. And if you see what I can do now, it may not look like a lot, but the way that I feel, I can feel the difference. It may not look like that big of a difference to people who don't know what they're looking for, but once you point things out to somebody and say, you know, when you turn your head to the left and you also kind of side bend your head, you're kind of crunching your neck together. I've assessed people where I said, look, do you see how you're turning your neck and how you're just trying to take your ear towards your shoulder also? Well, if you just turn your nose from the center to the left side and you don't turn your neck down, you don't have pain. Did you notice that? And they go, oh, all right. So sometimes just taking things away from people that they don't actually need, and they're doing it because their body is trying to get away from a movement that they can't do anyways. So hopefully that made sense. But what would you say that you see the most out of? So we have things like big box gyms, and we won't name them, but there doesn't really matter the setting. Big box gyms, small gyms, at home programs. There's all these different ways in which people have access now. I know that there's this thing called, there's an exercise bike program that's the Peloton bike, where you can do cycling classes, spin classes, and you get these different trainers from all the world. And the only thing that I really have as a negative for a lot of these programs is that you don't get to ask questions in a lot of cases. So if it's a DVD, you can't ask the instructor for help. You just see what you see, and that's it. And then you do it again the next day, maybe. So that's my biggest thing for what I see out there now. And there's nothing wrong with it, but sometimes it's not helpful for people because they can't ask questions. So that's why I think we're here. So what do you see that you've noticed lately?
I see that a lot of exercise is very trend-based. So, for instance, when people are thinking about going to do a certain class, and you think about the classes which have been updated, the most recent are you know, the newest classes might be hip hop or Zumba or whatever kind of newest class that is in vogue right now. I think those can be a little bit unwarranted for people. Now, granted, though, I would say this. I encourage all my clients to go out there and to try to do stuff and to just really take advantage of using their bodies in whatever way makes them feel good. But the thing that I just ask them not to do and to avoid is the thing which is going to cause them pain. So if something is causing you pain a little bit, then you really have to take a step back, and we need to figure out some things. So I'm super lucky that for my clients, I just really am all about communication and trust, and they let me know when even the slightest bit of irritation or pain is there, because when that happens, I know we're not doing something the way that we should be doing it. But, you know, outside of like maybe the trendy stuff going on, I think a lot of people should try new things. I think movement variability, when if kids are playing, different high school sports, I think the same should be true of adults. I think we absolutely need to vary up our movement. If it just means that you're in the gym doing stuff, you need a changed program then from at least like every couple of months, if not every month, to keep you optimally healthy. So change is going to be really good, and I think it's great to try new things. But it doesn't mean though that you need to kill yourself or hurt yourself or really sacrifice your body doing something that it's not maybe appropriate fit for you.
All right. So do you have a number one tip or a couple of tips for someone who they really just want to move better? But like, what are the things that you tell people? Like maybe you have a list of three things. What helps them move better immediately without exercise, without doing anything else? Because I know the number one thing for me is breathing. So what is what's your top list?
I'd say the biggest thing is going to be pay attention to any small irritation or pain that comes up. Because I find now we live in a society of the desk. So when we're just sticking to our chairs for, you know, probably on average, realistically, like 8 to 14 hours out of the day, when you count the car and the couch or the love seat and the workplace.
On your phone, iPads. That's,
right.
Tablets.
That's a lot of sitting. And I don't really necessarily believe that sitting is the killer. What I think, though, is it's still an overuse, though. Just because you're not moving somewhere doesn't mean that it's not having an effect. So I tell people to be very aware of how your body's feeling so that you can make sure to try different ways of moving. Maybe it's a whole different activity altogether, but to let me know then what's going on. And if you don't have anyone, then I encourage people, this would probably be my tip number two, get assessed from anyone that is certified in FMS, SFMA.
What's the difference for people who don't know the two?
FMS, which stands for Functional Movement Screen, is basically a measurement of your basic mobility and stability if you don't have any pain. Now, if you do have some pain, it would be better to see someone who's certified in SFMA.
What is that real quick again?
SFMA is the Selective Functional Movement Assessment, and the two systems are connected and have similar movements. Some of them, I would say, basically are the same, but SFMA looks for pain, and basically the criteria for SFMA is you have to have pain to go through that screen where it's going to help you get out and identify the biggest limitations for you to get out of pain and irritation. But then also, probably just as importantly, to keep you out of the irritation or pain so you're not going to get hurt in that same place or a different place. So you definitely want someone that's going to be, I'm taking this from straight from Shirley Sarwin and Mike Reinhold, who are two just amazing physical therapists. You want to be seeing someone at least once every 6 months. That would be my biggest suggestion, because if you don't do that, chances are you probably already have something going on. It's just not that big of a deal to you now. Well, when is going to be your iceberg moment when you crash into it and you're like, damn, I tore my ACL, I tore my labrum, I tore my rotator cuff, and you're out of the game for a couple months versus preventative care, getting it looked at. And guess what? You avoided a surgery in your joint by just maybe even using some health insurance or using just, you know, whatever money you have just to get assessed, and then a corrective exercise for that. So that'd be my tip number two. Tip number three, try out different stuff. Do different things. We are absolutely married to our desk, and it is important for us to, I think, do different movements. So like I said before, if you're just a gym rat, do different things in the gym. If you only play tennis, you know, on Thursdays or the weekend, it may be helpful for you to do something else, especially if you're feeling pain. If you're not in pain, it might not be that big of a deal. But if you are, even getting in some different movement, different exercise, different something can help.
So here's, I guess I reorganized my tip list, but first thing is moving is a good thing, unless you have pain. So if you don't have pain and you really don't know how to work out and you've never done it before, then getting something like the functional movement screen where you're getting your baseline movements checked, it's like an eye test. You're just checking to see, can you see or not? So the functional movement screen just puts you through movements and how well do you do them? Okay, well, whatever you don't do well, that's the things that you work at. Whatever you do well, you don't work on that because you already do it well. And when somebody gets trained from someone who does the screen, you on purpose aren't doing things that you're already good at because you're already good at it. And there's actually a chance that if they work you through those patterns, you can get worse. So the screen is there as a redundant system to make sure that, number one, they're not making you worse at things you're good at, and you're getting better at things you aren't good at. So when you get assessed, the difference between a screen and assessment is, one, is how you look at it, and two, how you apply certain things. So in the selective functional movement assessment, when I treat people, or when I assess them and then treat them, I'm looking to break down where they have pain. And again, you have to have pain for this one. I don't break anybody down who doesn't have pain. It's actually in the bylaws of this, essentially, is you're not allowed to basically break that down, because anybody who doesn't have pain when they move, you actually will always find things that are not perfect. And you can go down that rabbit hole, and it just basically will waste a bunch of time and money. If you are looking for things to create pain, you can do CrossFit if you're not prepared. But it's kind of a different topic. But so tip number one is just kind of figure out where you are. Tip number two is breathing. And that kind of goes along with body awareness. So kind of like what Vaughn was saying, I'm going to kind of expand in my own way. When I have somebody move around, move in different positions, sometimes it's pretty simple. Sometimes even sitting there, I'll have them slump over and say, why don't you take a deep breath? And they'll notice, you know what? It's harder to breathe that way. It's harder to take a breath inward. Whereas if you're then sitting up straight, hey, how about now? Do you know it's kind of easy to do that now? So if you're sitting down now, rotate your body all the way to the left without lifting your butt off the seat. And if it's hard at some point to even turn left, it's also going to be hard to breathe in that position. And also, how does it feel in that position? There are some therapies that will specifically take you into the position where you were injured, and they'll work through your tissues in that position to kind of help your mind and your body and everything kind of reconnect in that way. So some specific techniques out there, you have to go into the position where you don't want to be. So the other thing is understanding that you could have a limitation. So if you have kind of a setup for your bones where it's not meant to move into a squat, or you're trying to keep your knees too close together when you do squat, you have to know how far apart you should even have your knees when you squat. So when people are working out, it's okay to do the DVD, but you may want to actually just get connected with at least a personal trainer or somebody who can do a baseline assessment or screen of some sort, and then have them kind of measure what you're capable of doing. And then from there, give you some idea of where you should actually be going. So if you want to do that DVD, hey, go for it, because you know you're capable of doing those movements, but too many people don't know that they don't know. So but that would be kind of my tips. It's just trying to understand how you feel about doing things. I know that for me, I took a year off of soccer twice because I had a leg injury twice before I got into functional movements. And I just knew that I didn't want to run. I knew that I didn't want to train. And I knew that there was something wrong with my body that wasn't wanting me to do this. And if I was younger, I would have gone back out there and hurt myself again. But I just decided, you know, I'm at an age now where I'm going to listen just in case I'm right. And if you listen to your intuition, you're probably going to be right more times than you're not. So what do you think that most people are just unaware of, and what's preventing them from moving well?
The biggest thing that I see recently is going to be their posture, whereby if you tell someone to stand up straight, unfortunately, you're going to see massive forward head posture in probably the whole general population now. because the computers, phones have changed the way that we hold our head. And it's not just our head, but I'll find, for example, that you can have someone do a squat and their hips are just swaying like crazy to the left, where it looks like they're trying to do that. So when they squat down, their hips end up maybe like the middle, we'll say in the back, you know, in the middle of their butt, for example, ends up 2-3 inches to the left. And then when they get up, they think that's normal. And what I find is that to your brain, that's a very vertical movement. So your brain is telling you, I'm vertical. This is vertical. This is what vertical feels like to me. The reality is it's completely different and it's off. And I just had a client this past week. She did a squat, had a little bit of back pain. I checked her basic alignment of when she's standing up, and I could see that the shoulders were facing forward, the feet were facing forward, which is kind of always how we got to make sure of that, at least that's our starting point. But the hips and the pelvis were rotated literally about 15 degrees.
Is that a lot? For people who don't understand like how far that is, if you put your hand together like a right angle, like the corner of a box, and then you split the difference in half, that's 22 and a half degrees. And then if you almost split that in half, that's between 12 and 15 degrees. I mean, when you see that on someone, how normal is that when you see a 15-degree shift?
That's really significant. And typically, if I see anything bigger than about a 5-degree shift, I know that that can be causing problems, because what it's doing is it's putting a torque on you. So what people can't, I'll say this right now, you cannot know unless you're actually assessed, is if your alignment is really actually neutral in the way that you think that it looks, and your movement. And this is why it's really critical to see this and to notice this, because let's say your vision was 20/180 throughout your whole life. Would you not think that that's normal vision if you're the only person in this world and you end up being 40 years old? Well, of course you're going to think that that's normal, because that's the only way that you've ever seen before. The problem is that these kinds of things can be easily fixed and remedied by just getting it objectively measured and seen, so that we can see if you're out of that standard, if you're out of the norm. So that is, I would say, the biggest thing, and it's probably the reason why both me and Matt assess and are going back and forth with our own treatments with each other. Is because we can see things that the other person can't see.
We just want clarification from the other person too.
Yeah, it's good to get the clarification and the confirmation from it. But that would be the biggest thing that I would say that limits people. I mean, it's kind of like one of those things too. Hey, if I'm not in pain though, why should I care about this stuff? You won't now, but you will care though. That is a guarantee I can give you if your alignment keep staying out of a neutral alignment, and if your movement is out of the norm, it's more likely to get more and more out of the norm, and it will cause problems. The cool thing is we can change that course by just going through an assessment in the beginning. So even if you don't have pain, we're gonna make it easier for you to prevent pain in the future.
So one of the things that some people might be thinking about are, what about the people who never have pain, will never have pain, and have never had pain in their entire lives? So when your alignment is incorrect, so your hips are supposed to kind of line up. So think of putting two boxes on the ground, and think about being on the ocean where it's kind of wavy and those boxes are just acting like buoys. And if you put a board in between there and stack something vertical in the middle, that would be like your hips. If your hips essentially are even, then whatever's in between those two objects are gonna stay even. So that would be like your spine. if your spine really isn't vertical, like let's say you have a spinal deviation like scoliosis, it's going to change something called a rib angle, which is the way that your ribs are curved. So that can impact directly how you breathe, how you feel on a day-to-day basis. I mean, people who are really constricted, I don't think any of them feel real good during the day. They will have labored breathing, or they'll just have different breathing. But if the rib angle has changed, it's going to change how your shoulder blade glides on the ribs. And it took me a long time to kind of get the idea around my head of how do the ribs and the shoulder blade really work together. It's just a gliding motion. So if you put your hand and run it over a table, it's a gliding motion. And then you have your shoulder socket. So it's a ball inside of a socket, and it rotates around and around. And if you have a forward shoulder motion, your arm will not raise in front of you very far. And for anybody who wants to know kind of what it looks like to have forward head posture or scoliosis or things, you can look all that up on the internet. But just think of a giraffe. Do you think you want to look like your neck is like a giraffe's neck? But all you have to do now is go outside, look left, look right, or go to the mall, or go someplace where there's more than 20 people. Almost, I would say on average, it's probably 19 out of 20 people that have some variation of forward head posture. And that's just in the neck.
I would agree with that.
So otherwise, there's other things. So later we'll talk about this thing called upper and lower cross syndrome. But for now, it's just forward shoulder posture, or their hips are tucked under. So when you see people who walk and their feet are turned away from each other, a lot of times you'll see their hips are turned under, and it's interesting to watch them walk, and you'll see the hamstring tightness, and you'll see all these things, and they'll just walk, and they won't notice anything. And my absolute favorite movement dysfunction that I've ever seen is something I basically refer to as the zombie drag. So if you think of a really old school 1950s zombie where their arms are out in front of you, it's not really like that. It's more of the new movies where somebody will literally just be dragging their leg. And you see it in runners a lot where their hip dysfunction is so poor that they literally have to drag their leg and swing it in front of them to get that motion. And then they wonder why they have back pain. And then they wonder how they have all these other problems. So if you have zombie leg, it's an interesting thing to see. And for those of you that are living with it, you probably don't even realize you have it, because it can be really subtle. So there's other things like that. There's like bubble butt syndrome, where if you wear high heels chronically, you're going to see your butt sticking out, because I think that's what heels were designed to do. But that would be something called an anterior pelvic tilt, which we will also address later. But for people who don't wear heels who have an anterior pelvic tilt, it's going to put pressure into your lower back. So you may not feel pain, but it's going to change the way you breathe. So,
yep. And if you have occasional episodes of pain, or you have that once a year, even back pain episode, that's very likely musculoskeletal related, and because the pain obviously is in your back, right? So that should indicate to you something that, well, you know, maybe it's not just your shoe was a little bit lower than you thought it was and your legs were straight when you bent over, because you should have that mobility to already tie your shoe with. Maybe it's the way that your posture is, maybe your alignment, maybe your movement that you're just not aware of that feels normal for you but is creating that torque. So eventually that torque's going to be related to a disc herniation or whatever. But those kinds of things, I would say, as far as them being normal in Western society, are not normal in a functional movement system that you do need to pay attention to. So the no pain philosophy is over, or the no pain, no gain philosophy is done with, because yes, being able to work hard, being able to train through high, lactic acid, running, for example, is fine, but with training through actual joint pain, that's merely telling you that there is a fire, and you can try all the stuff you want to ignore it, but it is going to envelop you at some point and going to be causing some major problems.
I agree with that totally. I think the trainers or the people who are living in 1990 and any time before that, when they talk about movement, there are basic things like PT. When people come out of surgery, you need baseline strength. So you're going to do a lot of basic exercises, and you're going to do it for a couple weeks or maybe 6 weeks. But that's appropriate for that kind of setting where you just had surgery. You need to rebuild strength. But if that's your actual workout, it's not enough for most people to move in a way that doesn't cause pain or that will prevent pain from happening. So I think that's pretty much all I got. If you want to check us out on Facebook, just check out Movement Basics with Vaughn and Matt, and the page will be up soon.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thanks, Vaughn.